This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power Solutions is proudly brought to you by DSO Consulting. DSO Consulting. Truth, trust, results.
Truth, trust, results. Gitndi is consulting, and we are discussing Power Solutions. As I've already indicated, this is an initiative that was launched about 2 weeks ago right here on Power Business. And we practically are going to hit the ground running, looking at solutions, case studies, as well as feasibilities of challenges, how you get over some of the challenges that you may be facing as a business. We are joined in studio this evening by Mr. Andisa Ramabunga, and he's going to be talking to us as a group chief advisor at Ndiso Consulting on most of the case studies that we had already started mentioning just last week as an example of problem solving. Good evening.
Good evening, Tumisang. How are you?
I'm well, thank you so much. Bafana Bafana still at 0-0, so we'll have to wait and see how the evening proceeds. We are not problem-solving Bafana Bafana, though. Last week, we kicked off this, 2 weeks ago, this conversation about the challenges that have been at least solved by Ndiso on the likes of SASSA. We use that as a case study, but I'm seeing that, of course, there are many others that you and I are going to go through. One that hits me personally is the driver's license testing situation, the eNATIS system.
Yeah.
That is one that is proving to be a challenge. So in a case study like that, if one is unable to gain access to the program that is available online, and we are having difficulties as drivers, as well as those who are prospective drivers, to get onto the platform that is so new and is, it's meant to make things easier, but it's not. So let's start maybe with that case study as to creating a solution, but it's proving to be a problem. So you have to basically go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that you mention the licensing department.
Yeah, but, it's because I'm struggling.
Processing problems are besieging what I call SOEs or the social security net companies. I mean, it's not DTLC, right?
Yeah.
The recent one is the NEFSAS, with the students who are not able to begin their studies this year because of funding. Their applications have not been processed.
Yeah.
We've had the likes of the Road Accident Fund, were similarly in the same space. But maybe before we talk about processing, because processing is a very critical element of an organization. Mm. This is how an organization creates value. It's at the heart of everything. If you think about value creation, even yourself, you cannot have a cup of coffee without processing something.
All right.
Or you cannot have dinner without processing something.
Yeah.
So an organization can create value without processing of some sort. But it would be misplaced to view processing in isolation.
Right.
It's quite important to take a view that looks at an organization in its entirety.
Mm.
It's like a bit like an orchestra, if you think of it. It's made up of various components, right? There's a conductor, there's a soprano or a singer, there's the pianist and the violinist. All of them needs to play in tune to create the perfect harmony. The organization is exactly the same. The number of elements that over and above processing are quite critical in an organization. Strategy is key, and we'll talk about that, because it hits very much the likes of the UIF and the limited funds that are not available for the last scheme that's, I think, is about to expire or stopped at the end of March, which is TES. The amount of money available to compensate people in the Road Accident Fund. I mean, those are issues of strategy and business model, which are critical when you have to think about processing.
Mm.
You also have to think about the people that you employ in an organization, their skills and capabilities. You have to think about how the organization is structured, which we'll talk about in a bit, and the routines that are behind or supporting an organization. And culture, something that's least spoken about, plays a huge role in processing. But nonetheless, processing is very important because it's how we create value. So one of the things we always advocate when you think processing is quite important to understand the baseline. Understand how you create value as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
What are the critical tasks, or we call it work, that needs to be done? And for us, it goes more in detail rather than just mapping out processes. You typically go in organizations and you'll get these very nice process maps that will show you the flow of information in a very high level.
And implementation is something totally different.
Implementation is something very different. Mm. For us, there are three things you need to consider. I did say it's about the customer. Mm. And from the strategy, you'll determine who the customers are. And you have to understand their requirements or their demand on the process. Mm. That's the first starting block. Mm. Typical example, location.
Yeah.
It's a customer demand. If you are the road accident fund and people get injured in Mqanduli, you need to be there to originate the claims. Mm. So you need to understand that. Turnaround times. Mm. It takes, I think, the last time I checked, the road accident fund was 3 to 5 years, right? To settle.
It takes quite a long time.
So it's quite important that the starting block is understand what the customer's demand of your process. Mm. You then go to the next step that says understand the process itself. Map up the process. It's still a worthwhile exercise, but more importantly, understand what the economics, what I call of the process, the flow of information. How many people do you need in each process steps? The cost of operating, right? I mean, cost of administration is very important, and we've seen this in a number of institutions. Understand throughputs, be able to identify where work gets stuck.
Uh-huh.
Finally, and this is as a consultant, again, the career consultant is my pet, like, you have to benchmark yourself. And benchmarking by itself is an unnecessary process, but it helps in a number of ways where we are able to distinguish where you are vis-a-vis the competition.
Uh-huh.
I'll take one SOE, which is, again, is a social security net company, GEMS, which is a medical aid.
Oh, yes.
They have competition with the likes of Discovery. And
they have serious competitions.
Almost, in fact, it's even quite important now because there were rumors in the media that they are raising their hands to administer
the vaccination.
The vaccination, the new, what do you call this, new medical aid scheme that's supposed to be covering the whole country.
Yes.
The word will come back. The Discovery, was raising their hands. Mm-hmm. So it's quite important that
the NHI,
Health Insurance Act that's coming up. So processing, again, we'll speak to volumes as to who's better positioned to do this. If you're able to do this better than your competitor, by all means. So it's quite important that you benchmark yourself against competitors, but more importantly as well, be able to benchmark yourself about similar companies who are in other industries. Why can't they learn from the likes of SARS, for example? I mean, who have done wonders. Well, until recently, if you
that
might ask.
That is a great one.
Department of Home Affairs. I mean, they've reduced the time that it takes to learn a passport or even an ID. So there are great case studies to learn from it. So that's the starting benchmark, if you were to ask me.
I love the latter because you have given case studies that have efficiently turned themselves around. Home Affairs is one wonderful example of that. And when you spoke about strategy and creating this value, it's the how then that we must get into. Because once you start problem solving, yes, the ideas will be on paper and then the implementation stage comes. How do we marry the two so that the results are effective?
Yeah, look, I cannot overemphasize the deep understanding of strategy. And for us, it's just beyond. I mean, strategy, I think, is the most misunderstood concept.
I'm baffled myself.
And I'll simplify it for you.
How
do you create and capture value, right? Mm. And there's a number of elements that goes into understanding that. One is you need to understand your value proposition. What value are you creating for who? Mm. And how are you delivering it? I'll bring it home. So if you were to think, South African citizens who are, I mean, we all have the same equal right to certain benefits that the social security net companies. I'll go back again to, let's say, the compensation fund.
Yes.
Where if I'm injured in the workplace, they need to compensate me.
All right.
But our situations differ. If a farm worker gets injured vis-a-vis someone who lives in Sandton, slips in a floor.
Yeah.
Those are market segments, if you were to think about it, because the characteristics that define that market segment is very different.
True.
So how you service them, the channels that you use, is very different. So it's quite important to bring that back into processing and say, what does a process look like to compensate a farm worker vis-a-vis a process to compensate a worker who works in Sandton? What are the channels that we should use to service these people? How do we reach them?
Mm.
What sort of benefit as well? Because I mean, unfortunately, South Africa is an unequal society.
Hey.
So how you compensate people must take into consideration your economic status.
Mm.
Right? And this is where the business model comes in. And again, it's not as simple as that in this, because business models are defined by regulations and laws.
Very interesting, because when you speak of, it is not a blanket view that one can use, especially when it comes to strategy and execution.
It's quite important that you segment and understand how you deliver
that
value.
Segmentation then is further assisted by direct target marketing and understanding your clientele. And that's where organizational structure would also come in, because you can't be talking to a clientele that does not meet your own levels of what you are trying to service.
And interesting with case study that you brought on forward with the DTLC or the licensing department, the failure there was more on technology because it crashed, right?
And
automation is a very noble idea. But if you understand your segments, for example, you'll understand that there are certain segments of the population where, because of the characteristics and the history of the country, of that particular community, it's quite difficult to automate. Yeah. I mean, you can automate maybe up until the point of origination, but going back end, you then can automate. But forward, upstream in the value chain, you probably need to engage in some manual activities to collect information, to be able to determine who the beneficiaries are. And then when you load, you can automate. Again, technology is, I think, a lot of people think of it as a panacea to a lot of processing, and which is we advocate, because you do need to find technology, but you need to implement it properly.
Yeah.
And there's a way, by the way, which is says take a phased approach. Don't use this big bang approach in terms of, technology failures have been spectacular. There's certain clients we will not even mention where we have to write off these things in the millions of rents. So it's quite important to do it in a structured way. We always say go for quick wins or small innovations, incremental innovations. Build it in a systematic way so that you don't disrupt service delivery. The big bang approach, they're very expensive. Billions and billions of amounts are put in there. Not even, only in the public sector, by the way, even in the private sector, these amounts have to be written off eventually.
Baby steps, but baby steps that are going to fundamentally move you forward.
It's about serving the people. You should not lose that sight.
When we speak of technology, I'm very, very intrigued by the manner in which we are moving, and at a very fast pace. We didn't expect this. Due to COVID-19, we then have to pivot, and businesses have to do exactly the same. And you may find that some do not have that big budget to do so that they meet their service requirements. How do we then deal with that in the current space that we are in? One would be working from home, but maybe the system is currently not working with you, and it's not aligned to the type of dispensation that we find ourselves in. This is going to be a problem solver for quite some time.
For the longest of time, but it's calling upon us to create innovative business models to solving that problem. We've been fortunate to be involved with an outfit, and we don't want to punt a lot of people who are coming in the education sector, funny enough, where
very
you are able
relevant.
To deploy technology, but it's the ability for it to be flexible, which is a big part of processing. You should be able to operate optimally when you are online, but you'd be able to provide the similar services when you're offline. But again, there's capital investments required in that. It's going to require a number of stakeholders to get together to leverage or at least de-risk these projects for the small as a small player. But that said, you'll be surprised as a small player the amount of technologies that are available out there, open source and free. I mean, I can think of a lot of process automation, a number of tools that can automate processes. I mean, creating a website is not as costly as it used to be. An e-commerce website, which has the capability to, by the way, to originate whatever claim or process or service that you need to do. You can then obviously, you need to skill yourself up a bit, which is for the new business probably quite easy in the new technologies. But there's quite a lot involved. By the way, that does not say people cannot go out there. People can still go out there. You just need to observe the COVID protocols.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Benchmarking, that I found extremely interesting, because when you mentioned cost, immediately those two then started aligning in my head that, yes, when you do benchmark your business in terms of your competitors and even those who are in different sectors, the cost then becomes quite important, because what you then determine as a service charge would have to still be benchmarked with market activity.
Absolutely.
Sometimes businesses get this completely wrong. I mean, one item that you can buy at one store, as an example, for in the retail space, you'll find it elsewhere at a far lesser cost.
The reason why we call processing critical task in the world, this is how you create a competitive advantage, right?
Mm.
One of the ability that processing is able to give you as a business is exactly that, to be able to deliver something much more costly than the rest. I mean, you can do two things. You can price yourself at the same level as the other guys and cream the profit in between. Or you can decide to price yourself less so that you are much more attractive. But again, strategy is important when you're deciding on these matters. In the social security net space, and I always like this because this is where almost all of us are impacted.
Yep.
It's very important to be able to deliver a service at a cost-effective manner. It's pointless being able, if you are a SASSA, to deliver a rand for the indigents of this country, but it's costing you 120 to do that. It becomes uneconomic and unaffordable. And by the way, the reason why you want to reduce the cost of processing is because you want to create a surplus, right? Because the more money you have, or the less it costs you, the more money you have,
the more
you are able to divide the benefit and give it to the rest. I mean, we're all cash constrained. The country, the fiscal is cash constrained. Households are cash constrained. Cost becomes a very critical area where you are able to create a surplus. And there's no bending platform than now to push all these SOEs to be cost efficient.
Absolutely.
And at the heart of it is processing.
How has COVID-19, though, changed the dynamics of businesses trying to, number one, stay afloat, and secondly, make a turnaround that is going to fit the climate of the so-called new normal that we are walking into? Because it's quite uncertain and it's a bit muddy in terms of what do we know, what don't we know, what is sustainable, what is likely not to be sustainable. It's confusing.
It is. And I don't want to cast aspersion in terms of business management, but you'll soon realize that the old adage that says in times of good harvest, always keep what you can. So that it takes you in bad times. And you'll realize that a number of businesses that have survived have exercised some fiscal or financial prudency to get there. But to maybe direct your answer, COVID has had, I call it a leveler. There's a number of businesses that has closed down, which obviously is not a good thing. But that creates opportunities for others who are still in the space. Because the market share has significantly increased for them. Obviously, the cost of doing business is much higher. We need to reflect on that as well. But COVID is here to stay, so it requires us that we have innovative business solutions. For the big companies, it necessitates that, obviously, the work from home and the investment in those technologies that enable that. It's an interesting space for real estate sector, isn't it? And how the demand for that has reduced. So it's quite interesting. I can go on on the number of impacts that COVID has had in the list game, but it's both bad and good. So it's not necessarily all bad.
And it's the solutions that we need, especially to at least thrive in this so-called new
absolutely.
Normal. What COVID has also done is change a corporate culture. And when you spoke of how a business is then an orchestra.
Yeah.
What forms the symphony in an orchestra is the corporates that employ human beings, you and I, individuals. We are breathing, we are alive, but the dynamics have changed so much.
Yeah.
To what extent does the corporate culture then have to meet the service that you are looking to provide to your clientele so that it meets and it is a marriage of minds when you present yourself as an entire entity? It is a holistic entity that also speaks to your corporate culture as well as what is represented by your employees.
There's a saying that says culture eats strategy for lunch, dinner,
supper. Yeah.
I cannot overemphasize the need to create a superior culture in an organization. You can forget the skill set of the people. You can even forget how adequate your strategy is. But if you understand processing, which is work to be done, and you have the right culture, you can almost supersede and get over the hurdles of the lack of element, even in organization, by the way. Because when you have a culture of people who are diligent, people who are go-getters, people who are hungry, people who are willing to sacrifice and go out there, we are able to create even processes where they don't exist, organizations where they don't exist, markets where they don't exist. So the companies, by the way, and this has been proven by a lot of literature, that the long-lasting companies, the reason they last longer, market changes would always be there. You know, they say if you're chasing the JSE to be number one, it's always temporary.
Yeah.
If you're chasing the share price, it's always temporary. If you're chasing profits, it's cyclical. But a good culture in an organization will always make sure that you are able to harness in good times and able to sustain the bad times.
What I love about the element of corporate culture and how it feeds into the progress of a business is that you actually end up having employees or a family structure that is self-advertising through their work and through what it is that comes out of their mouth. Because
Absolutely.
When you speak of the corporate that you are employed in, you speak of it passionately once that corporate culture is highly defined and it is a comfortable space. I look forward to even more conversations with you because this is quite exciting. Problem solving is critical at this point in our lives for businesses in COVID-19. But what is even more exciting is that this has never been done before. We hear of challenges outside elsewhere, but we hardly ever tackle them head on. So it's going to be an exciting ride. Thank you so, so much for your insights this evening.
Thank you very much, Dindisa.
That is a Group Chief Advisor at Ndiso Consulting, Andisa Ramabunga, speaking to us this evening about a number of issues. I actually thought we were going to get into even more case studies, but I am extremely satisfied in that we started and kicked off this particular initiative with a well-rounded conversation that speaks on points that we are going to expand even far more in the coming weeks of this particular segment that we launched 2 weeks ago right here on Power Business. What is your experience, especially in COVID-19 as a business? You could be a big corporate or you could be a small entity. Do give us a call as always. This is a feature that is going to come to you on Thursdays right here on Power Business, and we take your calls on any matter that you want to respond on given the content that we discuss. 0861-987-000 is the number you dial us on WhatsApp. We take your voice notes as always on 0833-303-7093. You can also respond on Twitter. The account to use there is at PowerFM987 and the hashtag is Power Business. Your emails, we take those on Power Business at Power987. It's news time.
Power Solutions was proudly brought to you by Ndiso Consulting. Ndiso Consulting. Truth, trust, results.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.